Thanks, Greg. Yes, we are backstage with James Ennis, who's just played the Williams Violin Concerto. Bravo.
Thank you very much.
Now, you played this work with the Philadelphia Orchestra and Stefan Denev in Vail.
Right, that's correct. We played it back in July, so it's sort of our second go through with the work, and it's always nice to have that perspective of coming back to a piece, because when we did it in July, it was new to everybody. I think it was new to the orchestra as well, so that was a bit of a different experience than now, where we all know it a little bit and it's had a chance to settle, I guess I'd say.
And doing it in different settings, does that change your approach as well?
Well, I don't know if it changes the approach exactly. It probably changes the outcome. It's a very different type of program now than it was in Vail. And of course, Vail is outdoors in an amphitheater, and here we are in Verizon. So any different venue or different type of atmosphere, I suppose it probably changes the way you interpret it just a bit. You know, it's all about getting that message across. And so context, I think, does play a part, but not a huge part.
Well, it's a very personal work for John Williams, because he composed it and dedicated it to his wife, who died suddenly the year he was working on it. Does that circumstance affect how you approach it?
Well, I think that it's clearly a very dramatic, intense, and personal work. You know, I think that it's always interesting to inform yourself about the circumstances of the composition or the inspiration behind a composition, but there's a lot that goes into it. You know, I think it's a bit of a cheat and a bit of an easy way out to say, oh, well, his wife had passed, so this is sad music. You know, it's not like that. I mean, John Williams is a great composer with a world of emotions in his music. So it's certainly a very complex piece emotionally, technically, in terms of ensemble. And it's quite a journey, but one that I think is really extremely worthwhile. It's an amazing experience to play it.
It really does have a lot of very tender moments, a lot of very vigorous, lively moments. What do you think about when you're playing it?
You know, I think about trying to keep the line, to sustain the musical idea from start to finish. I think that that's always a great challenge in music, I think, is to keep the focus. And I think nowadays, maybe more than ever, you know, people very rarely do anything that resembles their concert hall experience. You know, people don't sit and do one thing for half an hour. Like, nobody does that, particularly not young people. They do 20 things for like 12 seconds and they do them all at the same time. So I think sustaining the idea behind the music is a great challenge, and particularly in a piece like this that has these elements that are very connected from movement to movement, and these themes and kernels of ideas that keep coming back within something that is at times fairly episodic. So you don't want it to just seem like a patchwork quilt. You know, you want to really bring out some of these ideas that are through the piece.
Is it possible to put these ideas into words?
Well, if it was, we wouldn't need the piece, right? You know, I don't think so. I think that I hope with a piece like this, you know, that means a lot to me and means a tremendous amount to Stefan Denev as well. I hope that it comes across to the listeners and means something to them. But as far as what it means and if that has any relation to what it means to us, that's kind of the mystery of the whole thing. That's something I really enjoy about music. It can be equally affecting to different people, but in very different ways.
And does this piece, the more you play it, kind of dig deeper into your soul and bring out different things in you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think probably any great piece, the more you get to know it, the more you find in it. But it's a tremendously complex thing, this piece. And I think that every time I have the chance to play it, I will probably, well, hopefully, have a little better idea of how to communicate that inner message. And just, I mean, getting to know the violin part is challenge enough, but then really having a understanding of the orchestra part and the interplay between the solo and the orchestra and the pacing of the piece, yeah, there's a lot to learn. And I hope I'll have many more chances in the future. You know, it'll be very interesting in 5 years or 10 years to maybe take a listen to tonight's broadcast and see if my views have changed, or if they've stayed the same. Who's to say?
Williams himself wrote some notes about the piece, and he says that while it's atonal in style, he thinks of it in the romantic tradition. What does that mean?
Well, I think that, yeah, the tonal language is highly chromatic, to say the least. But basically, it comes across, much of it, I think, as being a very lyrical piece. And in terms of a romantic violin concerto, this really has all the elements that you'd expect to find in a piece that was written 100 years earlier. You know, it's in three movements that are basically fast, slow, fast. It has a cadenza. It has fast bravura virtuosic playing. It has beautiful soaring melodies. So in that sense, if the tonal language were not so different, it might actually seem quite comparable to sort of a late romantic violin concerto.
And what about that cadenza?
I think that the main cadenza, the first movement, is emotionally a very intense part of the piece. It's a piece as the player, you sort of find yourself getting kind of whipped up into a lather at that moment. You know, you can really let it rip. It's a very powerful and profound part of the movement, and I think made all the more so because it's just for the violin. Everything drops out and it starts very quietly, and it reminds me, in certain ways it's much shorter, but in certain ways, of the intensity of the big cadenza from the first Shostakovich concerto, where in a way it all boils down to this one solo violin.
Do you have a lot of choices that you can make in the cadenza, and does it change with different performances?
Well, I mean, Mr. Williams' writing is very specific, but it's not constraining. So I think certainly you could have 50 different violinists play it and they'd all play it differently, while each feeling like they were remaining faithful to the intention of the score. So yeah, there's certainly a great deal of room for interpretation. And as far as playing it differently every night, I suppose to a certain extent, you know, I think that when the cadenza appears in the movement, it's a direct result of everything that's come before it. So depending on how things go before it, it quite naturally, I think, has to adapt to that.
Now, you mentioned your interaction with the orchestra. I also know you're a big fan of chamber music. You're artistic director of the Seattle Chamber Music Society, and you also have your own quartet, Ennis Quartet. Do you constantly find yourself going back and forth between chamber and recital and concerto work?
Yeah, I really enjoy the variety in my career these days of playing. I mean, really, the bulk of it is concerto work. That sort of seems to be just kind of the way the business world is right now, and I love that. So that, I guess, fills the bulk of my time. But if I can have a season where I'm playing a fair amount of work with my quartet, mixed chamber music, and of course that's always built in with my festivals in Seattle, solo violin repertoire, recitals with piano, concerto work, of course. I feel like that's best for me psychologically, it's best for me musically, it's best for me technically. You know, each one of these things sort of exercises different parts of the violinistic arsenal. So I love having that variety in my life. I feel very lucky that I get to sort of indulge all those things I love.
We talked last time, I think, about how people listen to different kinds of music and how chamber music maybe requires more active listening than larger works, although that's not necessarily true.
Yeah, I think that you know, people come to things for different reasons, and it's certainly possible to go to a symphony orchestra concert and sort of allow that music to wash over you. Though I think in this Williams concerto, this is a piece that the more you invest in it, personally, as a listener, the more you're going to get out of it. And certainly with chamber music, that tends to be the case, is it's quite an interactive experience, I think, with the players and the audience, that everyone has to sort of, I guess I used this word before, but invest in it to make the most of it.
Okay, thank you so much, James Ennis.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.